Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by iFixit, the free online repair manual for everything. Before you start your next build or fix, head over to iFixit.com/twit to snag the fully loaded ProTech toolkit for only $59.95 and check out their array of high-quality parts, tools, and guides. And by Casper, a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/knowhow and using the promo code KNOWHOW at checkout. Today on KNOWHOW,
it's the Holiday Geek Gift Giving Guide Maker Edition.
It's a Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I am Father Robert Ballos here.
And I'm Patrick Delahanty.
And for the next however many minutes it takes, we're going to be giving you some ideas to give gifts for the geeks in your life. Now, this is Black Friday, and it's going to be followed by Cyber Monday, so there's going to be some buying going on. The question is, what do you buy for that special geek in your life, specifically the Maker Geek? Now, we've done these gift guides in the past on multiple Twitch shows. But what I like about doing it for Know-How is we can actually look at some of those gifts that maybe aren't that glitzy, but for a maker, for someone who actually wants to create things, is dead on exactly what they wanted.
Yeah, and these are all things that are helpful in building the project, making the project, and completing it. And some of the things you may not even realize you want. So you can put this on your wish list.
Exactly. Now, we wanted to make sure that we're going to include things from all the major categories of Know-How Makery. That includes a lot of soldering tools, because a good soldering tool, a good soldering station, a good set of clippers, whatever it's going to be, is actually one of these crucial bits of toolage that you need if you're going to go on. We've also got some stuff from the 3D printing world, because we're all big about that. In fact, we would like more of you to have a decent 3D printer so that you can make along with us. And, of course, your specialty.
Cosplay stuff.
That's all coming
fun with that
on this edition of Know-How. Now, we have to start with something that gets asked of me all the time. Every time we do a soldering episode, people will say, what's the soldering station? We've shown this off, like, five times, but very good question, because there's a lot of people out there who still have their old Radio Shack wood burning soldering irons. Don't use those anymore. Those are horrible. You've seen those, right?
Guess what I use?
What?
Exactly. I bought my soldering iron at Radio Shack.
You know, I still have a couple of Radio Shack irons, but the tips are just, they're ridiculous. They've been carbonized, they're corroded,
it's
oxidized.
Black and, well,
Just not very good. But a lot of people stay with that because they think that a decent soldering station is going to cost too much. They look at the Hakko, or they look at, you know, the higher-end Wellers. But here's the thing. You don't have to buy from one of the huge name brands to have a decent soldering station, a decent soldering machine. In fact, we've been using this thing here for 3 years now. In fact, this is the original unit that I purchased. Now, it's going to go under several different names. This one is like U-Haw. But these are the Zenny series. And actually, Alex, we've got a link there for Amazon. This exact same model, exact same way it works. And the thing is, this is $80. It's under $80, and you get a very good digital soldering station, a hot air rework gun, a DC power supply, and a power meter, although I never, ever use that. So if I just turn this on, it allows me to essentially do everything that I need to do right from here. Now, the cool thing is I can digitally control the temperature of my iron. So I can raise it or lower it. This is not one of these, well, I guess the iron is about this hot. I just simply turn it on like that. And now I can set for 385, 386. It will warm up, and it actually warms up pretty dang quickly.
So I don't have to use my method of putting the soldering iron in a sponge?
No.
Listening to the sound it makes?
Well, I mean, you could still... the sponge is not wet enough. You can still do that, but, I mean, it's not absolutely necessary. The other item I like here is the hot air gun. Before this, whenever I wanted to do shrink wrap, you'd see me taking out a like a lighter, which will work in a pinch, but this is much better. I can control exactly how much heat I need. I can put it exactly where I need to put it. Now, the other nice thing about this station is that they give you different tips, so different tips for both the hot air gun for the soldering station, so I can choose exactly how fine of a tip do I want on my my soldering iron. I can choose how fine or how wide of a dispersion of air I want for the hot air rework gun. And I got to say, best purchase I've made on Know How, bar none, because it's lasted the longest and it's been used in the most projects.
Yeah, this is really nice system here. And, much better than what I get.
Yeah, probably. But, yeah. And again, $80, this is nice. This is a good start. And if you get the entire kit, it's actually nicer than this because it includes a couple of additional tools. But if you've got the soldering nut or the soldering bug in your house, this is not where it ends. There's a couple of bits and pieces of additional toolage that you're going to need for that maker in your home. Let's start off with some of the really simple stuff. Your soldering iron is ridiculously charred and blackened.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible.
Carbonized, right?
Yeah.
Don't do that. Instead, get one of these. Super simple device. This is the Hakko soldering iron tip cleaner. It's going to run you about $10. Alex, we've got a link for this. Now, there are cheaper ones. I kind of liked Hakko just because it has lasted a very long time. I've gone through a bunch of cheap ones. Spend a little bit more. Get something that's going to last you a couple of years. All it is a container that contains like a Brillo pad.
Yeah.
And it allows you to collect all the slag. So you can see all the time. I probably shouldn't be hitting it that hard, but that's all the times that I've cleaned off my iron. So when it's still hot, what you do is you just tap it a couple, wipe it, and that will clean off the tip, and then you can sort of, wipe it off on the sponge, and you're good to go. A lot of people will just use a sponge. That doesn't get enough of the slag off of the tip, and it just kind of sits there, and it starts to oxidize.
Well, it also cools it off so that it gets stuck to the tip permanently.
Yeah, which is good.
Yeah.
I like about this is, actually, if I heat this back up, if you use this properly, you can get the tip really nice and shiny again without having to really work. I know some people who sand.
Just buy a new tip.
Yeah, just do that. So it's getting close. All you have to do, is do this a couple times. Rotate the iron. Don't hit the bottom like I do. I just do that when I get impatient. And what will happen is now that tip, if you go to the overhead, that tip, that's what you want to see. That nice silverized look. The rest of the iron is black, but I don't care because I only work with the tip. And I can always also change these points depending on what kind of work I'm doing. So there you go, folks. Get yourself this, and this will make sure your $80 iron lasts a lot longer than it would otherwise.
You know, when I first started soldering, I was using my mother's soldering iron. She uses it for stained glass.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The tip is a big, fat tip.
Yeah.
It was not great.
The other nice thing about this is, again, the adjustable temperature. That's actually important because you do want to adjust depending on the project you're working on. So, for example, a lot of the times when I'm desoldering equipment that has come from a factory, they are using much higher temperature solder because they've got much more precise machines that could put a dollop exactly where I need it to go. In cases like that, I can boost the temperature all the way up to like 430, 450 degrees because I want it to immediately melt the solder. What you don't want is this is your solder joint, you don't want that. You have to like hold it on the solder joint in order to melt it because that means all that heat is not just going into the solder joint.
It's dissipating to everything else.
Everything else. That's when you burn
melt
boards.
The plastic.
Precisely. So you kind of want a low temperature, but you want a low temperature that's still enough to melt the solder immediately. Now, the solder I use is typically pretty low temperature solder. I can get it to melt at 350 degrees. So I'll set my iron around 375, 380, just so I can get that immediate melt and then flow it into what I need. You're going to have to do sort of a trial and error. Find what works for you. Just remember that a high temperature can sometimes save you from temperature damage. That's a tip from me to you. And now you know, and knowing is half the battle. All right, so I love that you know that. Okay, so that's the tip cleaner. You also need to work on some tools for the person to be able to work with wires. Now, I don't know about you. When I was a kid, I used my mom's sewing scissors.
Well, I used the kitchen scissors. They weren't for my mother didn't sew.
Anyway, yeah. if you're enterprising enough, you can use it both as a wire cutter, and then you just kind of slightly close the scissors, and you can remove the insulation.
How many times did you close it too much?
And then you have to start over.
Okay, it's a shorter wire now.
Folks, you're not a kid anymore. Get yourself some decent tools.
Yeah.
These are the ones that I like. I like the Tecton wire stripper, and this is just a no-name brand wire diagonal wire cutter. Let's start with the wire cutter. If you go to the Amazon link, this is $5, and this thing is absolutely fantastic. Now, I do own several. However, sometimes this happens on Amazon. Patrick, do some quick math here. If you go back to that link, do some quick math here. So a single is going to cost you $4.47, but if you buy it in a two-pack, wait, what? Wait, hold on.
Okay, and the three-pack is...
Math is hard.
This reminds me of the Burger King we've got near the studio that charges twice as much, or three times as much for a 20-piece McNugget.
Right. It's 10. Okay. I think it must be algorithmically generated because I've seen that more than once, where like a two-pack is more expensive per unit than a single.
Yeah. Well, and also these prices aren't set by Amazon themselves. It's set by the people selling the stuff on Amazon.
Yeah.
So somebody may have a two-pack and they don't have the one-pack. Somebody may have the one-pack.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Okay, so get yourself these. These are decent.
And these are cheaper than a good pair of scissors.
I know.
So there's no excuse to use scissors.
One thing, though. Once you get yourself a nice set of wire snips, please don't use it for anything else. I see people like cutting into plastic or even sheet metal. Yeah, it'll work and it will destroy the edge, and then you end up with blunted snips. So just use it for snips. That's it.
Everything has its purpose. That's why I got my sewing scissors and my wire cutters and paper scissors.
And I have tin shears that you actually use for cutting through sheet metal. Go figure. The other thing you need is this, a wire stripper. Don't use a set of scissors anymore. We do have a link for this. There are a couple of different ones out there. I would suggest you find one that's about $5. I don't particularly like these. This is one of those versions that has the different size holes already preset. Mm. That works. I kind of like old manual where I know how much I should close it. That's me.
Brings me back to the days of when I was using scissors.
but you know, you get finer control on this.
Yeah.
So you're going to be, you're looking at $10 for some decent tools to add along with your soldering station. Now let's go down from that to my favorite, the helping hands. And I did bring in a set of helping hands because everyone knows what helping hands looks like. But this one in particular is, the generic version. You've got a weighted base, you've got some alligator clips, you've got some sort of bar that spreads them, and then you've got a magnifying glass. Now, this, it looks simple, but I got to tell you, a decent set of helping hands makes all the difference when you're trying to assemble something.
Yeah, because you've only got two hands. One has to hold the soldering iron or whatever, and the other is holding the object and it's going to move around. Better to have that solid base.
Also, the fact that you're going to be heating stuff up.
Yeah, it's going to get
hot.
You
probably don't want to hold it. I'm silly like that. however, that $8 helping hands, that's nice. I've actually combined multiple units to make sort of a Frankenstein's helping hands. But
torture device.
Yeah, exactly. The one I prefer is this. This is a Vacnite helping hands. What I like about this is the bar, when you have the bar system, it kind of makes it difficult to get the angles you want. This, you can get any angle, and because I've got four arms, I can hold things at the corners. And I've also got that magnifying glass with an LED, so I can position it exactly where I need it to be in order to see what I'm working on. This is nice. It's kind of expensive. I mean, this is going to be running you upwards of $50. But again, if you're going to be doing a lot of soldering, it is nice. It is really, really nice to have.
And it's from the lab of Doc Ock.
All
these. Yeah.
By the way, I have made that on my own because you just get some gooseneck from Home Depot. And it came out to like $35. That's $47. So just get the nicer one.
Yeah. Well, if you're giving a gift, you want the nicer one.
Precisely. All right. Now, that's the toolage side. Let's talk about some of the expendables. The number one expendable that you're going to need when you are soldering is heat shrink tubing, because when you make spices, it doesn't help you if they're shorting out all the time. and by the way, please don't wrap everything in electrical tape. Electrical tape works really well for temporary stuff or, you know, AC wires under the house that are by themselves. If it's going to go into a project box, please, please, please use heat shrink. You've already got the heat gun on your soldering station, so why not take advantage of that to wrap it properly? Now, these are the two types of heat shrink that I always have in my kit. The first one, and these are both from your best, URBEST. It's a 530-piece assortment. This is going to cost you about $8. So this is not bad. It's got a bunch of different sizes, a bunch of different colors. Find a color combination, a color coordination that works for you and use it. But sometimes you have something that's a bit more specialized. That's a tougher splice, or perhaps you're worried about the wires coming apart, or perhaps you're worried because they're going to be near water. You don't want it to be shorting out. This is stuff that I keep for specialty. Again, if you go to the link for this, this is the Your Best adhesive-lined heat shrink tubing. Now, what's nice about this is it's heavier duty, so it's double-walled. And when you heat it up, it actually activates an adhesive inside of the heat shrink tubing, so it will adhere to both sides of the splice, and it makes it waterproof.
What are you doing? Nice flat one.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it'll be flat until
it's getting an assortment
make it circular.
Of different,
So I like to have both of these just because I don't want to have to wait to order heat shrink just because I ran out of the right type.
Yeah, and the 530 piece, that comes out to less than 2 cents per heat shrink.
Yeah, so go ahead and get
530, that's going to last you quite a while.
It should. I've had that 530-piece assortment probably for 3 years now, and if you notice, it barely looks like I've used any. I mean, it
hasn't made a dent.
It's still pretty full. I don't go crazy with it. I just like to have it. All right, so that's how we put solder onto stuff, and that's how we cover the things that we solder. The question is what happens when we need to remove it.
Yeah.
I hate this part. Desoldering is not fun. I'm not very good at it, and it reminds me that I've failed. I think that's the biggest problem, because if I'm desoldering something, it means you did a bad job and you should feel bad.
Or the manufacturer did a bad job and you're making it better.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah.
Let's go with that. No, it was me. It was me all being back. Now, in order to desolder, so this is to take the solder off of components that you've already put on, you're going to need a few things. The first thing you're going to need is a sodapult, which looks like this, a solder sucker, and some wick. Let's go ahead and start with the we've got a combo link here. So what the sodapult will do is it just creates a vacuum. It's a spring-loaded device. So let me show you here. All I have to do is this. If you come back, this charges it. And then when I push this button, it's just a little bit of suction. It's a plunger that just sucks up. So what you can do is you heat the solder, put this near enough to the solder joint, and then try to suck it up. It takes like tiny bits at a time.
Okay.
It works, but it is kind of tedious. I typically use this whenever I have huge globs of solder that I need to get rid of because I've done a bad job.
And how do you get the solder out of there?
Because there's also a little, I don't know if you can see it right there, there's like a little stick,
little tongue.
So if I push it enough, it will push it back out.
Okay.
Right, and then just go straight into the slag pile. This actually works a lot better if you know how to use it. This is a desoldering wick. Now, if you've ever done any soldering, you'll notice how the solder tends to go up the wire that you're trying to, right? Like if you're tinning. You want that. That's good because you want that adhesion. Well, this is essentially wire with nothing else. It's wire with no insulation. So I can unwind the width of it. And if I heat this up enough, actually, if you put yours down here, you can see how, there you go. See, some solder has wicked onto that desoldering wick. Anything that it pulls up, it's pulling away from the solder joint.
Right.
Now, in order to make that work, though, because this is not magic, what you do want to have is this. This is soldering paste. This is the stuff that is contained within, like, Rosencore solder. There's a little bit of this flux that, when you heat it up, will flow over the wick. And then once it flows over the wick, it becomes attracted to solder. So solder wants to come up into the wick. That's what you really want. If you just take this alone, heat it up and put it on a joint, you'll get like a little bit at the edge. But if you soak it, you get something that looks like this. which is what we want. So let's go ahead and we want to do a little exercise here.
Yeah.
Let's help out our audience. I've got something that we created a while back. This is from the Smitty days. This was the failed one.
When we were making
the digital clock. There's a bunch of components on this. This is a shield for an Arduino. And if you look at the bottom side, we've got a couple of not great solder joints. So I want to attract the solder. I want to get the solder off of that so maybe that I can pull these components back out. This would be, if I really screwed up, this is how I would fix it. So let's take this step by step. First thing we're going to do is I'm going to go ahead and clip off the used part because once it's got solder in it, it's not really going to be useful for us. There you go. Now I've got this. So I'm going to take this. I'm going to, do a little donkey. Just kind of get a little bit of solder in it. And let's see if I can get the nice sizzle. Good, I got my soldering iron temperature. So if I do this, there we go. See, that's all the flux. It's now permeating the wick. Now, hold it by the spool, not by the wick.
Yeah.
Because that wick is going to heat up really, really fast. And
there's
then
no
you smell
insulation
chicken
on it. Yeah.
Right. So what you want to do is... especially if it's old like this, if that solder's been around for a while, or if it's high temperature solder, I can actually take some of my lower temperature solder, put a little dollop on it. There we go. Thank you, Alex. And all that does is it makes the heat flow into that joint a little easier. And then I can take this, put the iron on the wick. If you hold the board, I don't have my helping hands. If you put the heat on the wick, and then put the wick on the solder joint. As soon as it starts melting, there you go. See how all of that is transferred to the wick?
Wow.
So that was clean wick. Now it's wick with solder. That solder came from someplace. Where it came from is the joint. And I could just keep doing this, go down, 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 and remove everything. You want to give it a try?
Sure.
All right, here you go. I'm going to get you some clean wick here. And then you're going to go ahead and dabble it in the solder, into the paste.
Dunk it right in.
Yeah, you don't need that much, but okay. That's fine. So flow it, because right now it's just chunky. So heat up the wick.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go, see? Well, that's fine. There you go. Now put the wick on the joint that you want to pull.
Let's go for this one.
There you go. And just put the solid, just put it right on top. Because you've got to transfer the heat through the wick onto the solder joint. There, you're starting to get some. There you go.
It's stuck.
Yeah, that's because it's attached to the solder. So heat it up until it's loosened. There you go. So take a look.
A little bit.
See here.
A little more practice.
You work on your technique. Essentially, let's take this one right here. This one's a larger dollop of solder. Yeah. Just do that. This actually would be a good time for me to change the tip to like one of the flat irons, because that one is much easier to get the heat out. And there you go. See all of that solder? And actually the component popped out.
I heard it pop out.
So that's what I want. I can clean a board pretty well doing this, but I only desolder like individual components I actually want. Normally if I have something like this where I've screwed it up, I would just toss it.
Yeah.
They're really inexpensive.
More time than it's worth.
Precisely. Yeah. So that's a basic soldering kit. It's a good soldering station. It's the tools that you need for things like cutting and stripping. It's the insulation so that you can make sure that nothing shorts out. And it's a way to fix the things that you broke. Now, if you were to buy all of this, the soldering station, the tools, the desoldering tools, you're looking at less than $130. And you can get the geek in your life an incredible kit that he or she will use probably for the rest of their maker career. So, yeah, why not?
Yeah, and if you're looking for any price point lower than that, there's a whole bunch of things here that you could give as options.
Yeah.
They're just as simple as wire cutters.
Yeah, and this is a decent station for, $80. But they have Zennies that are just 2-in-1. So it doesn't include the hot air gun. It might just be the iron and maybe a meter or a power supply. They've got those as low as $40. So, I mean, you can toy with this. I just kind of like this multi-unit, because it's got enough of the things that you're going to want to use. I especially like the fact that it has the hot air gun, and I especially like the fact that it has a way for me to output power, so I can adjust how much power this power source puts out It's a something that makes making things a little easier. I've got an exacting power supply.
Yeah, and when you have it all, you don't have to go out and get it later when you've discovered you need it.
Yeah, because, I mean, really, who wants to be going to the store when they're in the middle of a project?
Yeah.
Speaking of being in the middle of a project, Patrick, I kind of want to show off something like this. This is something that people should really consider when they are doing maker projects, and that is a way to keep all that smoke. Remember the smoke that you just saw?
Yeah.
Keep it away from you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Whoops.
This is something that I built. This is just a fan. It's just a 12-volt box fan, but what it will allow me to do is it will allow me to position it so that those fumes aren't going directly into my face. If you go to the side view here, Alex. So the way that it works is I'm not blowing onto it, because if I blow onto this station, it's going to cool the iron. It's going to cool the component. It makes it a lot more difficult to solder. But if I've got all the smoke, see how it just gets sucked away from me? That is so much better. Actually, hear me point it towards you.
Oh, great. Thanks.
There we go. See? There we go. So that's the proper use. Now it's, you know, it's blowing into a... Actually, that looks kind
of
cool.
I love the smell of solder in the morning.
Sorry about that. I could... I'm a bad person. Okay. But
I wasn't going to live that long anyway.
This is a super, super simple thing, and this is actually a future know-how project. We're going to be doing a little make on this when I build myself a little soldering station.
We'll finally have some fans.
But what I... No. No. I need to give you a little mic that you can just drop. Well, we have a piece of feedback when we come back that's going to integrate this into someone's request for variable voltage. But before we do that, you know what I'm going to do, Patrick?
What?
I want to give people yet another tool that they're going to want inside their maker kit.
This isn't enough? What else do we need?
No, now, this should be no surprise, because this is a vendor that we have long known and loved here on the TWiT TV network, because, well, they just get us. Now, if you've ever tried to do a job with the wrong tool... Now, Patrick, I don't know if you've ever done this, but back in the day, I would do things like opening up electronics cases with a flat screwdriver. You just kind of jam it into the crease and turn it, torque it. That always turns out well, right?
Sure.
Yeah. If you want to mar the case and put big old dents
and divots.
Or
the computers that use the weird screws. And you only have the Phillips.
Yeah,
so you gotta...
Oh, yeah. If you push hard enough, then maybe you might get the screw out before you completely strip the head.
Yeah.
Yeah, folks, you could do all that, but... Why? We're makers. We do things with precision. And the way that we do things with precision is to have the right tools, the right parts, and the right supplier of information. That's why we are so happy to have iFixit as a supporter of KnowHow. Now, this episode is brought to you by iFixit. You're familiar with them. You know that they like to take stuff apart. They teach people how to fix things. They're constantly posting teardowns and repair videos for popular devices like the Galaxy S8. The iPhones and the Switch, they're also leading the charge in the electronics repair tools industry with their iconic black and blue ProTech toolkit. If you check out the ProTech toolkit in their store, they'll explain how each piece of the kit was meticulously designed. These aren't bits that they just threw together. They listened to their users. They listened to you. They listened to the geeks who told them, what do I need to do the work that I do, to fix the things that I fix? And that's what they gave you in the ProTech toolkit. You won't find a high-quality toolkit like this on the market. Now, don't let the sleek design fool you. This toolkit's got both beauty and brawn, with high-quality steel bits and tough tools that can handle any repair or mod that you throw at them. And it's only $59.95. Now, the two-roll makes it compact and easy to store. This includes the 64-bit driver kit and all the bits that you need for just about any DIY electronics repair. It has a protective case that keeps your bits organized. You just open it, flip it over, and the bits won't fall out because they're held in place by a magnetic mat, which, by the way, doubles as the perfect spot to hold tiny components and screws as you're working on a job. They've also got a swivel-top magnetic precision driver and a flex extension, which is also magnetic, to reach those hard-to-reach screws in those difficult, tough projects. They've got a wide variety of plastic opening tools, spudgers, and picks to safely poke and pry with, as well as a suction cup with a new, fancy handle to remove display assemblies from things like, oh, I don't know, an iPad, an iPhone, or the Microsoft Surface Studio. They've got iFixit's own rubber-handled Jimmy Pry tool and a set of metal spludgers, as well as ESD-safe tweezers and an ESD safety strap so you don't destroy your job with static shock. And the best part? All of iFixit's tools are backed by iFixit's lifetime warranty. Now, you don't need to buy something to get iFixit's free repair resources. You can check out over 25,000 free repair guides over at iFixit.com. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to take care of yourself or that maker, geek, hacker, DIYer in your household. If you want to tackle your next hack, fix, or build with the ProTech Toolkit, just visit iFixit.com/twit. That's iFixit.com/twit to snag the fully loaded ProTech Toolkit for only $59.95. Again, that's iFixit.com/twit. And we thank iFixit for their support of Know How. Okay, Patrick, we've got a bit of feedback from a, very active member of our community. He's one of our Kitas, one of our know-it-alls. Rud Dog wants to know how we could do all the 3.3-volt stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. So what's he got?
He says, suggestions for a small 12-volt DC in, 3.3-volt out for current project. Looking at this one, but can't help thinking wasted power in the form of heat.
I guess this is always one of these things. Whenever you're translating from one voltage to another, typically from 5 to 3.3 or 12 to 5, et cetera, there's always the question of, well, am I...
Where does that extra voltage go? And it usually goes to heat.
Heat, right. And that's what a typical transformer will do, because when you're transforming down, it just vibrates and you're going to lose a little bit in heat. What you want is a switching power supply. You will still lose a little bit, but it's not nearly as bad. So the way that a switching power supply works is, let's say I have 12 volts. I just very rapidly switch, normally with a solid state transistor, the thing on and off. And I do it at a frequency so that whatever voltage is coming in will end up at the voltage that I want. So imagine if I've got a solid stream of power and I just kind of turn it off at regular intervals. It means that that 12 volt becomes 5 volts or 3.3, depending on how many times I switch the thing on and off per second.
Okay.
So what I would suggest is this. You've seen this before. This is from Ready to Fly Quads, but you can find these on eBay. It's a simple regulator. So this will go from 1 to 17 volts. It's going to cost you less than a dollar.
Wow.
In fact, I was able to buy something like 100 of these things for $75. So I've got so many of these in my kits because they're pretty much disposable and they work really, really well. This will take anything from 1 volt up to 17 volts. And I can step it down to anything from 1 volt to about 15 volts. It means I can step down, but I can't step up, of course, because it's not a buck. Now, here, right on the corner here, this is a potentiometer. And what that potentiometer allows me to do is, as I adjust it, it will adjust the voltage coming out of the regulator. Now, the cool thing is it's set. So it's not as if I get a different voltage coming out if I push 12 volts versus 17 volts. Once I set that, I can glue that down, and it'll always guarantee that as long as the voltage is above, say, 5, I can always get 5. Very, very nice, very, very dependable. No heat problem because, again, it doesn't dump power. It switches it on and off, uses synchronous rectification. Instead of diodes, it's going to use transistors right here to do the switching, and it's going to reduce voltage but increase the current. In fact, I can get a full 3 amps out of this thing, so up to 12 volts, 3 amps, which is decent. Now, I've got a little hack for this I want to show you, Patrick.
Okay.
Because this is a cool device and super inexpensive, but the problem is people have been complaining that they have to go in to adjust the potentiometer.
And it's tiny.
It's kind of a tiny little potentiometer. So I did a little something.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I know, right? You should always say uh-oh. This right here, this is another little know-how project that I've been working on. This actually allows me to cheat. What I've done is if you go to the overhead again, I've removed that potentiometer. I had to desolder it. We just did a little tutorial on desoldering. And then I attached one of these. So this is a 500-ohm potentiometer. So I just replaced the potentiometer on board with this potentiometer right here.
Yeah.
But now I can mount this away from that. So I get this little power unit on the side of my board. Let me show you what it does. Just pull the same power supply. So at the bottom, I've got just a standard plug. I can get anything from 12 volts to 17 volts. And then as I turn the potentiometer, it's actually adjusting the voltage out of that regulator, and I can go all the way up to full speed.
And now you don't need tiny tools to adjust it either.
Right, exactly. That's so it's just
so much better.
Yeah, so this is going to be, when I'm done, this is how I'm going to do it, because I also want people to have the ability to adjust how much airflow they have. By the way, there's a sound that you can hear. That's just the fill. I accidentally put the fan in before I removed all the filament, the stray filament. So it's, that's, again, my fault. That was me. So super simple project, but the nice thing about this is for 99 cents plus another 30 cents for the potentiometer, I've got myself something that, you know, it's actually very, very good voltage control.
Yeah, and we've doubled our fans.
And we've
can't help it.
Yeah, burn. Indeed, burn. Well, folks, we're going to come back to that in a bit, because Patrick's got to show you some cosplay stuff. Yeah. And I've got a couple of tools that I think maybe you need in your back shelf. Before we get there, though, we can't have a maker show without showing off a 3D printer. Now, mm-hmm. my original intent was to have this mono-price Maker Select Mini, the Delta, as the printer that we were going to feature on this episode. Unfortunately, they've run into some production problems.
Oh, no.
And this is not for sale yet. And we have a rule at Twit, we cannot review a product unless you can actually buy it. Now, by all means, this looks to be an awesome printer. For $150, it's a heated bed. It will do all the filaments that the big boys will do. It's a slightly smaller, actually, it's a very much smaller surface, but the portability on this thing is absolutely ridiculous. So this is what I would like to show you. Maybe we can later on, but until they have it for sale, I can't actually do it.
It looks a lot like my hand in a jar that we did
right?
a year ago.
You could actually have this print, the hand in the jar, and just close it off.
That's I just need the hand in there. And then.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I did test. I was able to attach an external power supply via a battery and turn this into a backpack printer that was printing as I was walking. It wasn't the most accurate when I was doing that, but...
So when you really need to print something on a hike.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to see the review of this once it's finally available.
I know. I just want to get
any
out
idea
there.
When it's coming?
I keep asking, and you know, they've got, obviously they've got the production down, but they just, it's not available yet on the website, and until it is, I can't push out the review.
Christmas is coming. They got to get it out.
Christmas is coming. But that doesn't mean we don't have a printer for you. In fact, we've got a printer that both of us have been watching and using for the past year or so.
And both of us have returned.
And both of us have returned at least once. This is the MonoPrice Maker Select Plus. Not too long ago, I reviewed the MonoPrice Maker Select version 2. It's a low-cost i3 clone that offered unparalleled value for a sub-$300 3D printer. However, while the price was right, the quality acceptable, and the flexibility impressive, it wasn't really a beginner's printer. The menu system could be a little clunky, the calibration process was an all-manual and all-frustrating item, and the frame itself needed a little extra support for really solid prints. That's why I also bought a MonoPrice Maker Select Plus. At $100 more than the version 2, it offers a better interface, faster speeds, semi-automated calibration, and a sturdier frame. The Plus has all the same features as the version 2. It supports a maximum build size of 200mm by 200mm by 180mm high, and sports a heated build plate that will help to keep your prints from curling due to thermal inconsistencies. The Plus offers the same 100 micron resolution as the version 2 and can use all the same filaments. ABS, PLA, XT, PET, TPU, TPC, FPE, FPA, HIPS, Jelly, Foam, and Felty, as well as any other filaments that are 1.75 millimeters thick and require 260 degrees Celsius or less for extruding. The differences between the Plus and the version 2 start with the speed and interface. Plus uses SD cards instead of micro SD while also supporting USB, which admittedly is a small difference, but it can also print at 150 millimeters per second instead of 100 millimeters per second, which is not a small difference. Also not a small difference is the menu system. While the V2 used a scroll wheel on a power and control unit that was linked to the printer via a non-detachable tether, the Plus has the power and control units built into the base of the printer. A 3.25-inch touchscreen gives you add-a-finger access to everything from temperature settings to filament operation to calibration to printing. Speaking of calibration, it's not a completely automated process, but it's definitely easier for the beginner than with the V2.
Initiating the leveling procedure brings up step-by-step instructions, starting with the preparation of a spacing measure, the thickness of a business card, or some heavy stock paper. The plus then moves the head from corner to corner, each time requiring you to adjust the bed screws to move the bed close enough to the extruder nozzle to exert slight pressure on the card, but not enough to keep it from moving. Here's the thing, though. Just like on the V2, previously calibrated corners can be moved out of alignment by the adjustment of the other corners. What this means practically is that you should keep running the calibration routine over and over until any adjustments to the screws can be done with less than one complete turn of the wheels. With the printer assembled, calibrated, and loaded, it's time to get printing. The Plus comes with a customized version of Cura for slicing your prints. You can use any slicer you'd like, and personally I prefer the full version of Cura because it gives me more minute control over the printing process. But it has to be said that the 3P version is much friendlier to beginners who are overwhelmed by all the settings in the full version. First layer adhesion was excellent, with only the most finicky projects requiring bed adhesive, also known as 80 Rockers hairspray, and the quality at least matched that of the V2. The Plus is also definitely faster than the V2, but I don't think it's 50% faster. I think the sturdier frame and the heavier base adds to the stability of the printing platform, and that allowed me to do a few prints with the Plus that didn't quite make it on the V2. There are a few issues with the quality of the printer itself, as this is my second Maker Select Plus, after my first one stopped working after 6 weeks of hard printing. And there have been many reports that echoed my experience, but Monoprice was quick to replace my printer, which, by the way, I ordered under a different name, so they didn't know it would be a review unit. And my replacement unit has been rock solid for months. I have long recommended the $300 Maker Select V2 as a solid 3D printer choice for those who wanted a heated bed, a wide array of filaments, a fast-ish printing experience, and decent resolution. So the question is, can I recommend the Plus at $100 more? The V2 can do almost everything that the Plus can do, albeit at a slower speed and with a bit more hassle. Still, after having both printers for almost a year now, I think I can offer this. If you are really budget constrained, go for the V2. It won't make you unhappy. However, if you can scrape together 33% more cash, the Plus is a far friendlier printer for beginners and a more stable 3D printer for the more advanced.
I know that was time lapse at the end there, but I kind of wish there was a printer that was that quick.
Oh.
Just to see it rise stuff. From nothing to something. That's just kind of cool.
Rise from your grave.
Yeah, it's funny. I've been 3D printing now for, 3 years? But I still get kind of giddy just watching it happen. It's amazing to think about being able to design something on a free computer program that's available on the internet, to put it onto an SD card, plug it into a machine, and then a few hours later, it's something I'm holding in my hands. It's just cool. Seriously. Coming from the background that I did where the Jetsons was space age, this is just like, really? I can't believe we're living in the future.
And imagine the future from this. It's only going to get better.
It is. Now, we're going to actually take a look at Patrick's, because believe it or not, Patrick had to send his in too, and we got it back just now, literally just now. And we're going to take a look at maybe some of the quality issues you might run into, just so you know. But by the way, I love Monoprice. They've been very, very good. They were good to me. The printers that they've replaced have all lasted really, really, really well. But, you know, there are issues. But before we get to those issues, let's go ahead and take a moment to thank another sponsor of this episode of Know How. Hey, Patrick, you like sleeping, right?
Every day.
I mean, did you know that the average person spends half of their life sleeping?
Wow.
No. About a third. A good third of their life is spent in bed. And if they're lucky and if they're smart, in a decent bed, think about it. With so much of your performance, so much of your life, so much of your future dependent on a good night's sleep, why is it that so few of us actually put the time, the effort, and yes, the money into getting something that works for us? Well, there's one company out there that's trying to change all that. They're trying to educate you as to what makes a good bed, and that company is Casper. Now, Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. Gasper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and then passing the savings directly to the consumer. Now, they understand that walking into a showroom and jumping onto a bed for 45 seconds is no indication of how a bed is actually going to work in your home. So they designed their product and their service to solve that. Casper mattresses are obsessively engineered at a fair price. Casper combines multiple supportive memory foams for a sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. That means it's not going to get sweaty at night. It's not going to be too firm or too soft. By using multiple layers, they allow the different contours of your body to find support no matter what they need. Plus, its breathable design sleeps cool to help you regulate your temperature through the night without tossing and turning. The Casper mattress provides long-lasting comfort and support, and you can buy it easily online and completely risk-free. Now, we got our Casper mattresses and tried them out, and I got to tell you, this thing is soft, it's comfortable, it's almost uncanny. Casper mattresses are, built on the understanding of the importance of truly trying out a mattress that in all reality you spend a third of your life on. So they offer free delivery and painless returns within a 100-day period so that you don't have to lie down in that showroom. Their mattresses uphold the highest environmental production standards, are made in the United States, and allow for free shipping and returns to the U.S., Canada, and the U.K. Casper recently introduced the Casper Wave mattress, which features a natural geometry support system and a new top layer. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to take your sleep seriously. Get a Casper mattress today. You can save an additional $50 towards a mattress purchase by going to casper.com/knowhow. That's casper.com/knowhow and entering the promo code knowhow at checkout. Again, that's casper.com/knowhow with the promo code knowhow. Terms and conditions apply. And we thank Casper for their support of knowhow. Okay, Patrick, so you just got your printer back. Now, we played with this very one when we did Scully. And Scully did
that
not...
That was the one with the lobotomy.
The lobotomy, yeah. Scully. Because there was some issue with your printer. The build plate wasn't adhering properly.
Right.
The temperature was variating. It was going up and down. So yep. What would happen is you'd kind of have the print just pop off the surface, which is what gave Scully his lobotomy. Yeah. You sent it in.
Yes.
And they actually...
They sent it back about a week later.
Yeah. It's the exact same printer, except they changed out... The bed.
Everything else seems to be the same. There's like little things that can show that it's used. And
right.
I recognize it. And I recognize it how I packed this box, too. They didn't even open that. They just replaced that part.
Yeah, they might have just actually replaced the entire bottom.
I don't think they did. Because there was some stuff, little printing stuff stuck down there.
Oh, so here's the thing about the Plus. I actually really do like the Plus, and I stand by my review. I think it's a phenomenal printer for $400. This is a $400 printer that will perform like $1,000 printers. Now, if I had $1,000, I probably wouldn't get this. I'd get something like the Prusa, the i3, that thing, or the Mark II. That is incredible. That is a fantastic printer, but it's 2 to 3 times the cost of this. And the capabilities that you get through this, even though it's kind of a pain when you have to deal with problems like this, it's still worth it, in my mind. But let's take a look at what they've done here. So what I like about the Plus is, unlike the two, you can actually separate the units. The frame is separate from this. In the version 2, the one that we reviewed a year ago, everything is always tied together because they're all tethered with undisconnectable cables. They're always in. It's more difficult to work with. It's more difficult to transport. I love the fact that I've actually got two units here. And I'm going to be full disclosure here. The reason why I love that is because this is probably the printer I'm taking with me to Rome.
Uh-huh.
And I need it to be disconnectable so that I can get it in the luggage properly.
Yeah. Pack.
So the other thing I like about this is this frame, it is pretty much the same as the frame that you're going to have on the 2, except it's higher, and it actually is beefier. It has a couple more support members in here, which means it's not going to flex as much. That's one of the things that you had to do for the Mark II, which is mod it with some 3D printed parts to kind of keep the frame from twitching.
Yeah, especially with the weight of the spool, if it's up here where it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it just tends to make the frame waddle when you're doing high-speed prints, and then you end up with layers that don't quite match up. The other thing is this. Yeah, if you could lift that up. Unlike the two where the... There we go. Unlike the two where you've got the control unit in a separate box off to the side... There we go.
Yeah.
This, the control unit and the bed, sits on the frame. So it actually weighs down the frame, which again adds to the stability of the unit. I kind of like that design. Very well done. A few things that we should mention, though, is so both Patrick and I have had the same problem. Mm-hmm. If you watch your screen, your readout, and you notice that the bed temperature starts to fluctuate a lot. Like mine would go from 90 degrees to 60 degrees to 0 degrees to 70 degrees to 80 degrees to 0. That's a serious problem, and you need to contact Monoprice right away, and they will replace the printer immediately because that's...
Or at least the bed.
The bed, because that's actually a fire hazard. So, yeah, just look for that. I from what I'm reading, it's one of the boards that they're using on the controller. It burns out, but instead of shutting down, it just gives you very inaccurate temperature readings.
Mine was right for a while, but then it just... Yeah, went haywire.
The other thing, and this happened in the one I replaced as well, I don't know what screw comes out, but if the bar actually comes off...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
We just discovered this
during
the show. During
the break, yeah. So, look out for that, because I think there's actually a screw that with some vibration, it just kind of comes right out. So that's again, something else that you need to watch for. I'm not trying to powder coat the review here. There are definite quality control issues that they're having with the Plus, but I still think it's a great printer.
Yeah,
especially at this price. I mean, seriously, are there better printers? Absolutely. They cost twice as much. So, yeah, Monoprice, still, good job. Just work on the quality control.
Yeah.
All right, Patrick, let's get over to you, because you've got some cosplay stuff that you think we need to take a look at. Show me what you got.
Well, I brought several things. Now, we did an episode on making armor.
Oh, right.
And how you can use the foam armor, and I showed off Svet Sabine outfit and how we did that.
I think it's great.
And one of the items we did, one of the items we used is a heat gun, and that shapes the foam into whatever shape you need it to be. And so I actually also have, and I've been standing on it the entire show.
Yes, because you needed to be taller.
Yeah, a piece of foam.
Oh. Now, and I've seen this. This is like the foam that they have at... for like kindergartens, right? I mean,
they have the colored
play
version.
Foam.
Yeah, and you can use that. It's literally the same stuff. It's just colorful. This you can get it at Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart. Harbor Freight usually has sales on this.
Right.
It's a good place to get it.
I see you've already cut a slice out of this.
Yeah, I had a project. Svet actually did this. She needed a piece for something she was working on, so she cut it out. Yeah, you can just cut. She cut it out with scissors. I would use a knife, and use the heat gun, and you can shape it, and it becomes very pliable, and you can get it into all sorts of different shapes.
Right.
You can glue it together.
The thing about foam is it will curve well.
Yeah.
But when you want to do a compound curve where there's a curve here and like a curve here,
then
that's when the foam
cuts.
Starts breaking apart.
Yeah, that's what you have to. But you can make cuts and various darts and get it into rounded shapes. And then you can use glues and layers of smooth on and coatings to make it nice and flat. I mentioned recently when I went to BlizzCon that Bill Duran and his wife, Brittany,
made
a Probius.
Yeah.
And it's the probe from StarCraft. And they had a remote control version. And they made that with all the rounded shapes.
Yep.
And it's pretty much round. But they did that all with this exact kind of foam.
Now, is there a method to this where, like, if, let's say I want to preserve this, the sort of the diamond look of the armor. Should I heat it from the opposite side? Because I think any surface that I heat, I'm going to damage it, correct?
You probably want to heat both sides because it's thick. And you would want it, like if you're... If you're folding it this way, the outside is going to bend more. So you need to heat this so it can expand and heat this side so it compresses. And the heat won't really damage it unless you get really close and really hot. And you've got to be careful about that. You don't want to leave fingerprints in there.
Oh, I can make this soft enough that I leave fingerprints. That's not
I don't know if you'd notice it in this with the pattern. But
on
on
this side,
I have,
would.
Yeah, I have. When I was doing Svet Sabine armor, I was using... because they were small pieces, I was using tongs to hold it, and the tongs left a little dent. But
you live and you learn.
Yeah,
you still have not given us the real time demonstration though, so you have to show
have
us
to
how
that.
You can do this.
And I do have some projects coming up that I will need to use these, and I have pack of these at home, and the packs are cheap. So if you know a cosplayer who has talked about doing some armor project, get them started. Get them a couple packs of these. They come in usually four packs, but you can find all
sorts. How much is a good heat gun going to cost me?
I think this cost me like $60.
Okay, that's
but
not bad.
There's a wide range, and if you're doing this, a heat gun is essential.
Yeah.
You could use your soldering iron one, but that's very,
small.
So yeah. If you do it small pieces, it'll work, but you're doing a large thing. You need a real heat gun.
Yeah. I used to have a nice heat gun for when I was doing model planes, and you'd basically shrink wrap the wings.
Yeah.
You'd put it down and then just shrink it to adhere it. So, yeah, they come in very, very handy.
Yeah. And the other thing I brought is the Dremel Sawmax. And I was using a Dremel to cut a lot of stuff for cosplay, and I kept using the cutting tool, and the cutting tool kept breaking and shattering.
Yeah,
that's a good
that'll
convince you to wear eye protection because that flies everywhere. So I had to find a better solution when I was cutting stuff, and I used the Dremel Sawmax.
Ooh.
It's a tiny handheld circular saw.
I like this.
And
cut off
so I was cutting plastic, and there's still a lot of white plastic bits in here. I'm still working on my K9 from Doctor Who.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, I've used the cutoff wheels on my little Dremel tool so often, but every once in a while, I wish I had a dedicated
so
tool for it.
It came with a variety of metal
that just looks
tools.
That looks kind of mean.
It's kind of multi-purpose.
Vicious. There you go.
There. And
okay. Well, how much is this?
This, I think it ran me like $80.
$80.
Or maybe $80 to $100, I think.
Okay.
I bought it a while ago. So.
Well, I've got a little parting shot as well.
I love this so much.
And that is this. So I've shown this on the know-how before. This is the 4200 Platinum Edition. We've got a link for this. It's going to run you about $190 to $200, but I've seen them on sale for as little as $150. So just check around, especially on Black Friday. It's got the 4200 version of the rotary tool, which everyone loves, and of course the extension, so that if you wanted to do sort of detail work, you could always hang the tool up high. And this is the extension. Actually, it goes the other way. And this is the extension, so that I can sort of get into hard to reach places.
Nice.
But the tool itself, this thing is phenomenal. What I love about it is the fact that this, normally it would be I'd have a chuck, right?
Yeah.
Those keys, over time, have caused more arthritis than any other thing in the face of the Maker universe, I think. This, I don't have that. I squeeze the trigger, and I can remove the bit.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So easy.
It's way, way easier. And it doesn't jam like I did with the chuck. Everything that you expect out of a Dremel, so I can go all the way down from minimal movement to ear-splitting whirring. But this also includes the little bits and bytes that I'm going to need in my toolkit. So everything from all the different cutoff wheels, the different tools, the different supports, the right angle adapter. This is what I like about this is if you've ever owned a Dremel, one of the biggest complaints is that bits and pieces tend to wander off.
Yeah, or they just wear out.
Or they just
especially
wear out.
Especially these sanding
ones.
Oh,
gosh, yes.
Yeah, those go real fast.
Yeah, so but this, it's sort of like everything has a place, everything goes back, and you very quickly know when you need to order more stuff.
And again,
you can buy a much cheaper Dremel. You can buy one of their lesser units. You can buy the 4200 all by itself, and you're going to save yourself, $50, $60. But what I like about having it in a toolkit is the fact that this goes back on a shelf, and I know everything is in here.
Yes.
I'm not going to go down 6 months down the line and look for my Dremel and then spend the next 3 days looking for the individual bits that I have lost and have been flung to the corners of my lab.
I have a similar Dremel. It's not this nice. It comes in a smaller case.
Yeah.
But it gets the job done.
Yeah. This is the one I suggest because I have multiples, and this is the only one I have two of because I was kind of afraid they would discontinue.
Oh, and this is so coming with you to Rome.
Okay. Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah.
I already have a list of everything that's going to fit, and it's a Dremel, the Dremel tool. It's one of the 3D printers, and it's like a small batch of parts, which includes Arduinos and keytring tubing.
And, you know, out of everything we've shown today, I think the Dremel, if I had to pick one thing to be on a desert island with, Dremel.
Although,
assuming it has power on the desert island.
Solar panels then.
Solar panels and a Dremel, and I could build a house.
There you have it, folks. Patrick will build you a house.
I'll build a house.
We know that this was a lot of information, and we want to make it easy for you to get that information. You don't have to rewind the show and look for the individual pieces. You could always go to our show notes where we have links to everything that we've shown you, including where you can buy it. So if you want to assemble a little maker kit for yourself or for that special someone, you just go to our show notes, which, Patrick, you're the programmer. Where do we put those?
I put those at twit.tv/KH.
All right, that's right. And don't forget that you can also subscribe to us there. In fact, that's the best way to support the show. Just go to twit.tv/KH, and there's a little drop-down menu for you to get, your audio version, your video version, or your high-definition video version, where you can automatically drop it into your device of choice each and every single week. If you want us to keep bringing you maker goodness, if you want us to keep doing know-how, if you want us to keep you up to date with your DIY geekiness, please subscribe and tell your friends to subscribe as well. Of course, that's not the only place where you're going to find us. We've got a social presence, Patrick. That's right.
Yeah.
Google Plus. Just go to Google Plus, look for know-how. This is a very short approval process so we can keep out all the spam accounts. But once you're there, you get access to almost 12,000 Kitas. Those are our know-it-alls, the people who are in every stage of the maker journey. They can help you. You can ask questions. You can answer questions. You can post pictures of your projects, and we'll try to get them here right on know-how. Of course, that's not the only place to find us.
Yeah.
Yeah, Twitters. Where are you?
I'm at twitter.com/pdelahanty.
That's right. You're going to find me at twitter.com/PadreSJ. We've got one more member of our community. He's a good guy. He's filled with rage. That's why we call him Ragey. Ragey, where do they find you on Twitter?
I'm over here frying the bacon.
He's frying the bacon at twitter.com/ANELF3. That's right.
Oh, it smells good. Oh,
rage bacon. There's none other like it.
All right, let's wrap up so we can have some of that bacon.
That's right. Until next time, I am Father Robert Balasair.
And I'm Patrick Delahanty.
And now that you know how,
go buy it.